You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 4th of February. Trade deadline week is upon us. How much should the Rockets' blowout of the Jazz impact decisions? Let's look at a bigger picture. What are the Jazz doing against the best teams in the NBA? Market is beginning to be set. We'll look at that, plus all the other news around the NBA on a raucous trade deadline week Monday on Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and what's going on with the Jazz. Hopefully a little bit about what's going on in the rest of the NBA. When you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz, whether it's Siri or Google. Just say whatever the key phrase is and then say, play podcast Locked On Jazz. All right, let's get into a few things here. Today's show, by the way, as we try to figure out what's going on with the Jazz, we'll dig into a few things. I'll give you a few thoughts. All that kind of fun stuff coming up on the show. Today's show brought to you by our friends over at Slow the Flow. Oh, actually, by Iron Gate Financial or Global, Iron Gate Global Advisors and Murdoch Chevy bringing you the show today. All right, let's dig into this. So the Jazz get smoked by the Rockets the other night. And really, that was a night where, as much as we're going to talk about Harden and some other things, it's the 51st worst offensive performance of the year. We were worse against the Grizzlies in the third game of the year. We were worse against Dallas in the 50-point blowout. We were worse against the Lakers when we went down to L.A., played really, really good defense and lost. And that's it. So the offense really didn't get going. An 88.4 offensive rating. Harden, the defense was middle of the pack. But Houston's offense is incredible. And for most of the night, the Jazz did a good job of corralling that defense, holding it together. What ended up happening by the end, I thought, or even by the end of the second quarter, was that the lack of offense just eventually cracked the defense. I always kind of think there's a point in time, it's an incredible performance if a team is able to truly go through the entire night offensive with offensive struggles and then find a way to break through. But the Rockets for the season are obviously elite offensively, averaging about 111.5, and the Jazz defense on that night kept them below their average, I believe. Let me check it. They didn't. 114.4. So by the end of the night, they didn't even hold them to average. And the defense, frankly, has not been as great recently. I feel like we've been caught in rotations an awful lot. The Blazers put up a 108 offensive rating against us. The Nuggets put up a 107. Minnesota, 113. The Blazers, a 126. And then the Rockets, a 114. So there's a little concern to me defensively that the team is not quite as sharp as it once was earlier in the year when the Jazz had that amazing run from December 12th on, where the defense was sub 100 in all but four nights. And even one of those was a 101, where the defense kind of went back to last year. It has not been as elite recently. Probably worth digging into and trying to figure out the why that's the case a little bit. And have not done that, but we don't play till Wednesday, so I'll have some time to look into that. But that's one thought that I have a little bit, is that I did think the defense broke down, but I also don't feel as though we're seeing as dominating a performance as in this recent stretch against good teams too, frankly, and we'll get into that in a second, that we have. Harden is, I know that people want to argue about the calls and the officiating, and he's the most dominating offensive player the game has seen, probably since Wilt Chamberlain, and then you add in the fact that he's like size and Wilt Chamberlain's not. We really haven't seen a player like him. It's pretty impossible to stop. I don't know what the answer on it is. You can say he gets the benefit of the doubt, but that's and that's probably accurate. But he also, you know, there was the play where Rubio's drive, where he open court, Rubio's running next to him. Rubio's not in position. He's just strong and powerful enough to run into Rubio, draw the foul. Same play happens later. Rubio has the defender in the same position. He's just not strong enough and powerful enough. The one thing that does jump out to me a little bit in the last few games is where I feel like we've gotten caught in rotation. We're usually a very, very good team at denying the three-point shot. And if you look back at our kind of great defensive stretch, it wasn't that we were forcing teams to miss, it was that they weren't taking them. So, you know, Miami got 24 and Thunder got 25 and Portland took 23 against us and the Raptors were at 20 and Cleveland at 20 and New York at 20 and Milwaukee, I think, who likes to take a lot, only got 25 off, and Detroit only got 25 off, and the Lakers only got 27 and Chicago only got 25. I mean, that whole stretch where we were so good defensively. Recently, Minnesota got 36 threes off. Portland got 32. Atlanta got 46. The Rockets got 39 threes off. They were actually, and all of them kind of making a few. Opponents' percentage of field goal attempts from three for the season were at 32%. Our last four games have been at 47, 36, 47, 45. Prior to that, we just had people under 32%. And similar to early in the season, we were giving up a lot of threes. As well. That's kind of, if you go back and look at the first half of the season, we did that an awful lot. So there seems to have been something switched there where we're not quite right defensively recently as well. So that's kind of my quick take on the Rockets game. And let me be clear on this. Like, losing to Portland by 27 and losing to the Rockets by 27, I'm not a big believer in margin of deficit, but I'd say the Portland one, I've always just felt it's a bad matchup. I'm a little surprised every time we beat Portland, we split the season series with them. So there's two things to say here. One is, from a big picture standpoint, we just split the season series with both Houston and Portland, and that's what you really would anticipate for the season. And then you got to go beat the Atlantas, and you got to go beat the Clevelands and beat the Phoenix. And we've done that. But there are some signs that aren't great right now. Like that loss, I'll admit, like, from, so a lot of times where I get on this show and I kind of tell you, you know what, like, that one, I don't feel that way. I thought that was without Clint Capella. I actually think without Chris Paul is a benefit to the Rockets, but without Clint Capella, chance to win the season series, that was I thought a game where you walked out of that one, you got it and you felt really good about it. Now, on the other end, this stretch right here where they played Portland, Denver, Minnesota, Portland, and Houston, and they went, I think, they go 3-3 in that stretch. You know, you'd like to probably have gone 4-2. That's the game that, to me, you jump that 4-2, you feel like, all right, we're heading, and didn't happen. So it's a little bit of a, that one's a little bit of a kind of a foundation shocker. But with that said, I really like the idea, we turned over 20 times against Houston, we better give up another draft pick to get Mike Conley. I don't really like that recency bias kind of analysis, but I do think there's some points of non-recency bias, big picture, 54 games into the season, we can look at here in just a moment and maybe say, all right, these are real issues. We have a 54-game sample size. The schedule is evened out a little bit. It's not as crazy. We have 26 games against the 12 really good teams in the league, the 7 other Western Conference playoff teams, and the 5 good Eastern Conference teams. We can look at those, and we'll do that when we continue. We're going to break this schedule up a little bit and see if there are some things that, as we go into the trade deadline, if you're the Jazz organization, that you legitimately can look at and say, okay, these are things we might want to address from a legitimate sample size, not just the recency bias of, wow, we lost to Portland by 27 and we lost to Houston by 27. We'll do that. First, I want you to hear more about this really neat group Spencer Nelson is working with, Iron Gate Global Advisors. Iron Gate Global Advisors is a Salt Lake financial group that's got a unique combination of talent. Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, is now working with him. That's how I found out about him. It's probably worth noting, Spencer's not just a hoop guy. He's got an MBA, accounting and finance degrees, worked in private equity, worked in Wall Street. Super smart dude. Anyway,
got two guys leading this crew. Brian, who's a former Utah State guy, longtime investment management. He's the chief investment officer. And then there's Brett,
who Spencer tells us about.
Brett has a very cool background, which includes an opportunity he had to work with an options shop in Chicago named Thinkorswim, which is a very well-known options trading shop in the options world. He brings that unique skill set to IronGate, which adds another component to Brian's active management and being able to use options as an asset class to provide protection in down markets and generate income when markets are doing well or flat. Being able to combine myself and Brett and Brian's background and skill sets provides kind of a perfect marriage that really differentiates IronGate Global Advisors and provides real value to our clients.
Find out more about IronGate by calling Spencer at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334. Or email Spencer at Spencer@IGGA.com. That's Spencer@IGGA.com. Anytime we're talking investing, please understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. So, there are some signs that are really good, and there are some signs that say to me, like, oh, let's dig into it. So let's do all of that. Now, we've had a fairly road-heavy Western Conference schedule at times, and if you look at what we've done against Western Conference teams on the road, right? So, and it looks great. Like, those are, you're digging in. It's a little bit of a small sample size, but right now the Warriors are the best at 9-6. We're 9-8. Denver's 9-8. Clippers are 8-10. Lakers are 8-11. Rockets get that win. They're 7-8. The Thunder are 7-9. Okay, so that looks really good. If you just go home games against Western Conference teams, then we don't look as good. Then suddenly we're 8-7. San Antonio's 17-3. Denver's 14-2. Portland's 12-6. Dallas is 11-5. We're the only Memphis at 7-6 is with us, and Phoenix at 7-11. So you combine all of them and just take only Western Conference teams. We've played the fewest games against the West of anyone, which is worth noting that the schedule has begun to even out. We're 17-15. Denver's the best at 23-10. Then San Antonio's plus 8. Golden State's plus 12 at 22-10. We hover in the middle at 17-15. From a net rating standpoint, we're the fourth best. Our offense is the 13th best Western Conference offense against Western Conference opponents. And if you go back to kind of where I guessed we would be with Pack, that or points gained, that's pretty true. So that's, like, we have a big enough sample size right now. Our offense is 13th in the West against Western Conference teams. That, like, got to look at that. Defensively, we're the third best team against Western Conference teams with a 105.5. What happens if we just look at Western Conference teams versus Eastern Conference teams? Our defense is still third. Our offense jumps to 11th. Gets a little better. We're 13-9. We've played the best of the Eastern Conference teams. Other teams have not. That one's a little bit due to our schedule. Portland's 14-3, though. Denver's 14-5. Golden State's 15-5. Thunder 15-5. Like, these are games you have to win. We've done a fairly good job of that. So what did we learn there? Like, what's a legitimate non-recency bias data point here that if you're the Jazz front office heading into the trade deadline, you look at and say, ooh. So I think that number that we had there, home or road against Western Conference teams, We're 13th offensively against other Western Conference teams. The Lakers, by the way, are 12th, like 0.1 difference from us. And the Phoenix Suns and Memphis are 5 points below us. So, but of the 13 teams that are like legitimate playoff teams, which are actually probably 11 right now, we're last of that group. That jumps out to me a little bit. Like, if I'm in a meeting with Dennis Lindsay and Walt Perrin and Dave Fredman and their crew, Bart Taylor and Andrew and all of them, I'm bringing this up. Like, we're offensively challenged. Overall, we're 20th in the league offensively. I went through, so then the next question is, you know, where does this show up? So if you look at the standings right now, and you look at what we're doing against plus 500 teams, it shows up. We are against plus 500 teams. Sorry, let me see if I can find that again. I think we're 10 and 18. So we are, oh, it depends which opponents plus 500. They now have us at 14 and 19. Okay, so that's the using, I don't know how they always, if it's current 500 teams or when they were 500. But let's compare it. Denver's 23 and 9. Golden State's 24 and 12. Oklahoma City's only played 22 games against plus 500 teams. They're 13 and 9. Portland, who we think we're about the same at, is 18 and 13. San Antonio is 15 and 13. Houston is 18 and 13. And we're 14 and 19. All right, I'm going to go with that as another data point. Legitimate, full season data point. I'm looking for data points of concern, by the way. We're not looking for data points of strength. We're looking for data points of concern as we move into the trade deadline. So, we're all right. The Clippers are 14 and 18. Sacramento's 10 and 20. Lakers are 12 and 14, better than us. Minnesota's 12 and 21. Dallas is 10 and 20. Pelicans are 12 and 21. Memphis is 13 and 21. We're eerily close against plus 500 teams of being that second tier. Or third tier, really, right? The first tier is Denver and Golden State. The next tier is Oklahoma City, Portland, San Antonio, Houston, who are all plus 500. And then there's the group of us that's below 500. We're the best of the group, but not much. So that's a little that would be my second data point of disconcertion. With that knowledge, let's run through these teams. To me, now we're going to go even dig deeper. What's happening? There are 12 teams we're going to look at. We're going to drop Sacramento and LA because they're out of the playoffs. And the chances are we're not playing a team that's below us right now in the playoffs. I think there's a chance we could play any of the other Western Conference teams in the playoffs, and we'd play a team the caliber of the five good Eastern Conference teams. So let's take a look at those 12 teams and see what's going on. When we, and I don't actually have wins and losses, but I think in those 26 games, we're about 10 and 16. That's where I think I had that number earlier. It's 26 games. It's about half of our games against those teams. Our efficiency differential in those games is a minus 2.2. In our 28 games against the other teams, and if I'm right that we're 10 and 16, then that would mean that we're 30 and 23, 24. So that would mean that we're 20 and 8 in these games, which is great. Like the idea that, oh, we're always losing to teams, that's not true. Right? If we're 10 and 16, then we're 20 and 8 in these other games. We're plus 7.5 against the lesser teams. Okay, so we're feasting, as we should, this is what you want to do, on the lesser teams. But from a standpoint of, you know, where are we compared to the elite in the league, playing the elite of the league, this would be another data point that jumps out. I have had two concerns all season long. Okay, one is, and I said all year, for us to be great, we have to be elite defensively again because we're not going to be better than average offensively. In fact, I could probably go back and try to find my season predictions. Let me pull them up. If I find, I have my 17, 18. Let me see if I can find my 18, 19 pack predictions. I had us projected as the 11th best offensive team in the Western Conference. Oh, no, this is what happened. This is, never mind. That was a year ago. Let me see if I can find it. I can't find it right away. I wasn't planning on getting it, so sorry about that. Oh, wait, here we go. Found it. What did I have us projected at? Just to back, I'm trying to back up. This has been a season-long concern. So I had our offensive ranking in the Western Conference. Actually, I had us at 7th in the Western Conference this year offensively. Number one defensively. And that got us to 2nd in the Western Conference, right next to Houston. Virtually tied, actually, with New Orleans, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City. I mean, almost identical. So the offense, maybe a little less than we expected, 20th in the league offensively. What's interesting here, and this is the second piece of concern that I had this year, was whether or not the offensive explosion that's taking place in the league means that when the Jazz defense slows down a Denver or a Houston or a San Antonio or a Golden State, they're so great offensively that when we bring them to their 7 points below average, they're still better than what our offense can do. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but this is, I think, important. So the offensive explosion that's happening in the NBA is real, right? So if the offensive rating of Golden State, New Orleans, Denver, Houston, San Antonio, and the Clippers against other Western Conference teams, who we were just talking about, is still plus 110. Our defense, like the median team of this group, is 110. Portland is 110. Our defense is 105.5. That means we're playing great defense. We're a great defensive team against these teams. But if we hold Golden State, New Orleans, Denver, Houston, San Antonio 5 or 7 points per 100 possessions below their average, which is an amazing defensive night, that's what makes us the best defensive team in the league, do we actually have the offensive firepower to still get to a 108-109 offensive rating and win that game? That's the concern. As the offenses have gotten better and better and better and better, they're so good that when you hold them down, they're still really productive. And to me, that's the trick here. So what's happened so far this year when we play those caliber of teams? Our offense is 2.5 points per 100 possessions less good against the 12 playoff caliber opponent type teams. That's not actually a huge number. It's probably what you'd expect. We go from a 105.1 to a 107.6. We're a 106.4 for the season. It's kind of right there. Our defense, however, goes against the lesser opponents from 100 to a 107.3. And that's a little bit of what I'm talking about. You get these best offensive teams. The fact that we're holding them to a 107.3 is still amazing defense. The problem is our offense against better defensive teams and just in general has a hard time getting to that number. And thus, I think that's the reason why we're struggling against the best teams in the league. The league average offense of Western Conference teams is better than the league average offense right? The West's offense is better. And so you have to kind of look at that and understand that we're not only we're in a better conference, we're in an offensive powerhouse conference. I'm not sure. There was a lot there. I'm going to summarize it when we come back and then talk about where the trade market is today and see if that makes any sense. Any of this makes any sense to anyone. I'm not sure I did a very good job there. What you can do a good job with is your car buying experience. And if you're looking for a truck, Chevy has got the market on trucks. They're winning every award imaginable. They've got an incredible lineup. The Silverado is their big truck. I drove it for a while. It was like sitting in a Lazy Boy chair, just above the world in a most beautiful cruising ride. And then you had all this power and could do truck type things. The Colorado was the smaller version. It was really, really versatile, fun to have. We had it for the summer. Great truck. Imagine what it'd be like in the winter. Be terrific as well. Chevy, Murdoch Chevy, Tyson and the crew down there do a wonderful job. They've got 90-plus years of working with people in Utah. They've got that incredible relationship. Chevy is Americana. Murdoch is Utah. The whole thing comes together in this beautiful synergy of Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. They're also in Logan. Stop by, see them. Great deals to kick off the 2019 car buying experience. And remember, you get the Murdoch guarantee as well. It's all at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Stop by, say hi to Tyson and the crew there when you have a chance. All right, let me summarize that. Thank you for sticking with me. I don't even know if I can. Here are my bullet points. Data points of concern going into the trade deadline were less good than the other Western Conference teams against the best teams in the league. Our defense, while still great against the best offensive teams in the league, or just the best teams in the league, those offenses are so good that even as we hold them down, we're having a hard time getting our offense up to that point. We are 10-16 against the 12 other playoff caliber opponents. We're 20-8 against the other 17 teams in the NBA. That's not totally surprising. That's kind of what you'd expect, but we're a little less good against plus 500 teams than the other best Western Conference teams. So it's really interesting. Those are the data points that if I'm the trick is anytime you alter something, there's a yin for a yang. And as you look at those data points, what do you do to fix those without ruining what you are? It's really complicated. The market has gotten set a little bit here. I think it's really interesting. So Rodney Hood and Kyle Korver have both been traded. Rodney Hood went to the Blazers this weekend, if you didn't hear that. The price for both of them was the same. Expiring contract, 2 second-round draft picks. So the off-the-bench guard shooter, Korver far better than Hood, but still, is 2 second-round draft picks. Justin Holiday, similar type player, 2 second-round draft picks. Both Hood and Korver expire at the end of the year. So, Wayne Ellington, maybe Nikola Mirotic, what other players? Garrett Temple. Maybe Jamichael Green, Memphis. Players that are being talked about, rumored to be dealt. All of those seem to be in the range of below a first-round pick and seem to be what I would call a Wesley Matthews, probably. I don't know. I don't think Wesley's any better than Kyle Korver or Rodney Hood at this point. So I think those are all kind of the market has been set at 2 second-round picks. The Kristaps Porzingis' deal is for a star. It's a young player and two firsts. So what is the middle market here? What is the market for the players, frankly, talked about a lot, of Mike Conley? What is the market for those, Marc Gasol? For those, is it a first? Conley's interesting because he's got $30 million left on both the last 2 years, which is a negative in some ways, but it's also, I'm also classifying Mirotić and Ellington and these other, Wesley Matthews and these others as a negative because you only have them for 2 months. So the market has begun to be set for these players. Interesting one going on with the Clippers on what they do here. I'd keep a close eye on them. They've been very quiet. We haven't heard much about them. They would like to go get two stars. Ideal was Durant and Kawhi. Durant now is either talking possibility New York, still possibility Golden State. Do they feel secure in that? Are they, if they feel secure in it, should they move some of their pieces that they know they're not going to re-sign? If they're not secure about it, they have a playoff caliber team that they could have, without doing a lot, they could add one player. So it'll be interesting to see Patrick Beverley, Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris. Is there any element to them that they know they're not re-signing those guys because of the fact that they know they're going to go get these other guys and they end up making a move to get something for those players? It seems unlikely. So a lot of different little pieces going on in this puzzle right now that's taking place. I think what you also have is you had a lot of deals being talked about that, like, oh, let's get it done over the weekend. And then you get to the push comes to shove moment where someone's got to give in and no one's giving in on Saturday or Sunday. They're giving in at the last minute on Thursday. Memphis has got Gasol and Conley out in the marketplace. They've talked to both of them. They've openly shopped them. If they don't get what they want, are they really bringing him back the way they did Tyreke Evans last year? Or have they gone too far down the road that the last second on Thursday, they balk? It's going to be interesting to see. In the case of Conley, he's got 2 years left. They can go through the whole deal again in the offseason. Probably has about the same value. Gasol has that player option. Probably, if he's in Memphis, he picks it up. And then they can do the same thing again. A lot of pieces moving. That's where we stand. That is Locked On Jazz for this Monday. Have a good one. Trade deadline week. We'll be on top of it all week. Locked On NBA is going to be amazing. Ben Golliver on Tuesday. Today was Josh Lloyd with the biggest stories from local experts. Wednesday, I think Trevor Booker is going to try to join the show. Thursday, we may do some sort of live programming for you. Friday, Sam Amick will recap the draft. Kind of awesome stuff. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, when you get in your car, tell your car to play podcast Locked On Jazz.